will finish top three in passing yards this season. I think he will be in the MVP conversation for at least one point in the season. I'm going to say he makes the Pro Bowl.
Welcome to this episode of the Undrafted Free Agents Podcast, a show where two guys who never made it playing football talk about football. Here are your hosts, Austin Gregory and Nick Kugis.
And welcome back to yet another episode of the UDFA Podcast, episode number 8. Glad to be back once again. First of all, before we get into things, just for myself, I'm sure Nick would agree with me here. Thank you guys for pushing us over that 100 total play mark finally.
Yes, sir.
Episode 7 pushed us over that 100 total play mark last week, so we appreciate all the support we've had up to this point. A lot of people just continue to show their support through social media by just listening to the podcast and all the different platforms. Nick and I were just looking at some of the analytics we can get from Anchor while we were chilling here editing the podcast last Friday, and yeah. I think we have fans in like 10 different states at least or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. You can really break it down with these analytics, but yeah, we got fans all over the country, which is really cool to see. Just see where people are tuning in from. Just parts of the world, you know, maybe parts of the world we've never been to and parts of the country we've never been to before. So we're glad the podcast reaches you wherever you are. Like we said, we're on every platform, so we're just really glad that it gets to the people that want to listen. So yeah,
and you know, it's nice because we do have some stuff to talk about before we get into our different segments and stuff.
Yeah.
The most important news in terms of, you know, kind of how we feel about stuff is the Rams brought out their new alternate uniform, which was pretty fire. I can't complain about it. I know you were a fan of it. I know there's some other people who, you know, might think you weren't right about it. Because for those of you who don't know, Nick has his own Rams podcast and he runs his own social media through it. And he has some sources who helped him kind of confirm kind of what these uniforms were going to look like. And Nick had his first ever hate comment from somebody on Reddit this past
week.
Means
I'm making it, you know what I mean? But yeah, I mean, these uniforms are, you know, being a part of the Rams community for a while now and having a Rams podcast and just being involved on Rams social media, you come quickly to understand that uniforms are a big, big part of, you know, Rams fanship culture. Fans love the uniforms ever since the Rams came back to Los Angeles. Just, you can see most of the fans, we just wanted new uniforms, and we finally got them last year with that rebrand. And last year, when we got those two new uniforms, you know, the blue and yellow kind of modernized throwback uniform, as well as the bone uniform last year, it was pretty 50-50. A lot of people weren't too happy with the way those looked. And so from that release, the Rams stated that they were going to add another uniform in 2021 and 2022 as well. So the 2021 uniform got released yesterday, and it's like a modern white, yellow, and blue throwback uniform that really like kind of looks like the uniform that we won our only Super Bowl in St. Louis against Tennessee. And the one that they put out yesterday, this modern throwback uniform, is really beautiful. It seems like a lot of fans love it. I love it. I was thinking about even driving to SoFi to get a Ramsey jersey yesterday because I really like the way it looks, and I want to get a Ramsey jersey. But yeah, it's a really, really nice looking jersey. And I think we're going to wear it 3 times this year. Week 1 against the Bears Sunday night, which is going to be really cool. Week 9 against the Titans on Sunday Night Football again. So it's kind of a little Super Bowl rematch with the uniforms there. And then the very next week, week 10 at the Niners on Monday Night Football. So every time we're going to wear them, it's going to be prime time. So they're going to be under the lights, you know, looking good. But yeah, you're right. I have been reporting on this for a while now with my Rams page, and I want to say I was on top of it. I was like weeks in advance. I knew what they were going to look like from my sources who reach out to me because they know that I have a following that really wants to know about this stuff. So they tell me what they hear, and they were all right. So, you know, good looks for me, good looks for the podcast and stuff like that. But yeah, you're right. On Reddit, I showed you yesterday, there's a guy that kind of was discrediting me and saying that I was getting my information from like other people on Reddit, just all these random places. But I get my information from sources that work, you know, like close to the Rams. Like even this last leak I got was from a guy that talked specifically with the Rams player. So I feel pretty comfortable with the work I'm doing, and you know, that's just kind of what that is. But yeah, anyways, uniforms look great, and I'm really excited to see them next year. So
yeah, well, I'll just be over here with my classic royal blue and white, and my white and red Giants uniforms as I wait and hope one day that our red uniforms make their return at some point.
I think they will.
Could happen next year with the alternate helmets, but you know, we'll never know. A little good segue right here: Rams, Titans. Jeff Fisher.
Yeah.
News came out. Jeff Fisher, buddy of your father, as we like to say.
Yeah.
Will be inducted into the Titans Ring of Honor this season. Obviously, you know, he had tons of success in his time in Tennessee with the Titans, and, you know, very much deserving so of this spot in the Ring of Honor. Story a little different sided in terms of his tenure with the Rams. Obviously, he was the coach before Sean McVay entered into Rams franchise, and Fisher was obviously the one who was a part of the team that traded to be able to get Goff in the 2016 draft. So obviously, you know, just nice to see that he gets honored here with the Titans, and kind of just, you know, I think funny that it's perfect segue with Rams Titans, as you mentioned. You know, we're going to see those uniforms back at some point against the Titans this season.
Yeah, I mean, and Jeff Fisher is a Rams coach and a Titans coach, and yeah, he's getting inducted into the Ring of Honor in Tennessee, you know, as he should. You know, he was a fantastic coach in Tennessee. I think he was 147-120 over his 17 seasons with the Titans. He took them to their only Super Bowl appearance in 99, which, of course, he lost to the St. Louis Rams. But, you know, this is a pretty legendary coach for the Titans organization, you know, an organization that was, you know, they moved on from the Oilers age and turned into the Titans. And he was kind of that coach in the transition there. But yeah, I mean, he's the only coach in their history to win 13 games in the season, and he did that three different times with them. So yeah, he definitely deserves to be in that Ring of Honor. You know, I love Jeff Fisher. He's a great guy. I think he's a good coach. You know, his style of coaching was very, it was great for the time with the Titans, you know, in the early 2000s, you know, late 90s. But, you know, as we all know, when it kind of got to his stint with the Rams and closer to like around the 2010s to 2016 when he got fired, he just really wasn't keeping up with how the NFL was moving and how it's just the game has changed. And that's kind of the reason why he got fired. And he's kind of been a meme for finishing 7-9. That's what everyone wants to say about him, you know, Mr. 7-9. But I like the guy. I'm sure he's up to some good things these days. I think he's just kind of settling down somewhere in some cabin on the lake, just fishing. I think I follow him on Twitter and kind of see what he's up to. But, yeah, he's going to be in that Titans Ring of Honor, which is well-deserved. So, you know, good for Jeff Fisher.
Yeah, shout out to Jeff Fisher. And with that being said, that's kind of all we have right now in terms of NFL news, which is going to take us into our kind of first question we have of the day that we've been putting off for weeks now because we just keep not getting it to it.
Yeah, we just got plenty of content, you know.
We're just running out of room.
Coming up with plenty of content to talk about.
We have that hour limit that we try to have, so we don't want to keep, you know, going on forever. So our question is, which team from the NFC and which team from the AFC do we think is going to have the biggest leap from the 2021 season to the 2020-2021 season to the 2021-22 season, and then also the biggest fall as well. So for myself and Nick, I know we have a couple of the same teams because it's hard not to say these teams for each one of the categories. We're also in agreement on the two teams I have for the biggest fall. That's why Nick picked a different team for one of the teams for the biggest fall, because we didn't want to just have the same thing on and on again. So first, biggest leap, we are in agreement for the AFC with the Los Angeles Chargers here to have the biggest leap here in the AFC. Obviously, in previous episodes, for those of you who would have listened, you would have heard that Nick and I both see Brandon Staley, the first-year head coach of Los Angeles Chargers, as our pick to win Coach of the Year this year. We think, you know, obviously the Chargers playing the same division as the Kansas City Chiefs, who, you know, it's kind of hard to get past them. I actually saw earlier this week Patrick Mahomes was playing in a golf tournament, I believe, in Lake Tahoe, and somebody from the crowd shouted out to him, "You should be worried about Herbert," and he said, "I'll believe it when I see it." Yeah. So there's Mahomes' stance on his opinion of the Chargers. But I think, you know, Chargers, it's there for them to kind of make this run. I had Justin Herbert as my MVP pick for this year. I think that, you know, it's going to be for them time to prove it. Obviously, Brandon Staley is obviously the important piece they needed to fix the issue for them last year, which was their defense. They blew so many games last year. It just became a routine for them. And I just, you know, think there's no reason for them not to make a massive leap from the 2020-2021 season to the 2021-2022 season.
Yeah, I agree. And the Chargers were a team that were 7-9 last year, you know, in that AFC West, a pretty tough division. But I'm looking at their schedule, and it looks like they lost about 6 or 7 games by one score. And that was, you know, down to a lot of games. That was down to coaching and blowing leads. But, you know, the Chargers in recent history have been a team every season you look at, they kind of think that they're going to have the talent to finally get over that hump and be a winning team and whatnot. But injuries just always seem to hit them hard. I'm not sure why that is. So that's going to be a major key if they're going to turn this thing around like that they've been thought to do in these past few years. And you're right, Brandon Staley on paper should make that defense a lot better. They have a lot of stars for him to work with, similar to the Rams where he just came from. So on paper, this looks like it's going to work. Justin Herbert, perennial young quarterback. So it looks like it's going to work on paper, but like we said, this is the Chargers. It's very unpredictable what they're going to do and how healthy they're going to be in the season. Like we said, injuries hit them very hard, like they did last year. But, you know, they got Derwin James, the Defensive Player of the Year candidate, coming back. They got Joey Bosa, just kind of stars around that defensive side of the ball. But yeah, I mean, if they lost 6 or 7 games by one score last year and still finished 7-9, like that, you score one touchdown or one field goal in those games last year and don't choke, and you could be looking at a 12-win team. So this is a very intriguing situation. Like I hope the Chargers can stay healthy, because I personally want to see their full potential, because we haven't seen that in a while. So yeah, I just think that this is a pretty clear-cut candidate for a biggest leap there. And who knows, maybe they'll be competitive with the Chiefs. They should, you know, finish above the Raiders and the Broncos. But yeah, the Chiefs are kind of their big brother right now. So we're gonna see how that ends up in 2021. But yeah, hoping for them to stay healthy as with any NFL team next year. But yeah, that's my that's our pick for the AFC biggest leap. So who do you got for the NFC?
For the NFC, I have a 6-10 team, just like yourself does.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. But we don't have the same team. My team is my New York Giants.
Okay.
I think, you know, it's very possible it's time for them to kind of make that turn. Obviously, this is the season for Daniel Jones to prove himself. Last year, you know, really over the last couple of years, the Giants have had a lot of one-possession games that they've lost. I can't give you the exact numbers, but a couple of years ago, I think there's 7 or 8 games the Giants lost by one score. So obviously, you know, it's been frustrating with that happening. And, you know, last year obviously was, you know, we didn't, you know, deserve to be in the playoffs as a 6-10 team, but, you know, we were still second place in our division, and the way that we didn't make the playoffs was, you know, really stupid because of, you know, we all know how week 17 Eagles Washington football team played out. So, you know, it's whatever, but, you know, I've been looking at this Giants schedule past couple of weeks and kind of thinking to myself, you know, how possible it is for the Giants to kind of make a run here. And, you know, I don't even see it as completely impossible for us to start the season 5-0 this year. Our first 3 weeks is in New York against Denver, obviously a very struggling Denver Broncos team that we don't really know the future of right now, especially if Drew Locke is still a quarterback come week one. Then we have the following week, we have Thursday Night Football in Washington. You know, Washington continues to get better, but Washington continues to lose to Daniel Jones. Washington is the only team that Daniel Jones has not lost to, Daniel Jones being, I believe, 4-0 in his career, the Washington football team. And, you know, the Giants just continue to figure out ways to beat them. Then week three, we play Atlanta, and we know kind of the situation with Atlanta. They're kind of in a rebuild mode at this point. You know, it'll be nice for me to see Kyle Pitts play. Week four, another situation where we don't really know what's going to happen because we're playing the Saints, and, you know, we don't really know how that team's going to play out without Drew Brees. Obviously, you know, they still have a lot of their star talent. They have, you know, plenty of dollars spent on talent there, but we really don't know the situation. And then we play the Cowboys week five, which is always a toss-up every single time we play the Cowboys, and that's leading up to when we play your Rams week six. So I think, you know, it's time for the Giants to really make this turn. Obviously, it's a big prove it year for Daniel Jones. Everybody's behind Joe Judge, our head coach. Patrick Graham did a great job with the defense last year, and you know, they added pieces on both sides of the football, which they needed to do. And it seems like, you know, as time goes by, people seem to be adapting more and more to Dave Gettleman as their general manager, with a lot of the stuff he's been able to do last year, bringing in Bradberry and Blake Martinez, this year bringing in Golladay and Adoree Jackson being our two big free agent signings, in addition to, you know, others. But I think, you know, it's kind of time. And, you know, when we're playing the two divisions that we're playing are the NFC South and the AFC West. Obviously, the AFC West is a little bit of a challenging division, but the NFC South, you know, it's really, you know, the Bucs that we have to get past. And last year we lost to the Bucs on a taken away pass interference call and a 2-point conversion. So I think, you know, it's time for the Giants to make this jump. And obviously we both have the Giants winning this division this year. And I haven't fully predicted the schedule quite yet, because I'm still going back and forth on it. But I think we could probably be an 11-win team this year, which would obviously be a big leap for the Giants.
Yeah, I like the Giants a lot. I like what they did this offseason, you know, addressing a lot of the weapon holes. I really like the addition of Golladay. I love Golladay. And I'm obviously very high on Kadarius Toney, like I've mentioned in previous episodes. I just think this is a very impressive offense. But, you know, like we've said, I think the only question mark right now really is Daniel Jones. And if he can, you know, finally shut the critics up and turn it around and, you know, change the Giants into a winning team. Because I think all the pieces are there finally for him to do so. Like I said, a very impressive offense, and the defense last year was very surprising and very good. So I think that the Giants have that potential to make a big leap and win the division. You know, we both think they're going to win the division. I like to see it. I'm tired of kind of seeing the Cowboys and the Eagles win it. And I know the football team won last year, but I feel like I need to see the Giants win that division again. And I like to see it happen. So yeah, I can see that happening for sure. And you know, going the other way, which teams are going to fall the hardest from 2020, in the AFC and NFC? I'll let you start here with the AFC. I feel like we might have the same team. But if not, go ahead, take us away.
Yeah, we both have the Pittsburgh Steelers here. We've talked about this on the podcast multiple times. We both don't have the Steelers making the playoffs this year. Obviously last year, Steelers starting 11-0 and then going 1-5 in their final six games, including their playoff game where they just got absolutely smacked around by the Browns. They ended up almost coming back in that game, to be fair to them, but they were down like 28 points in like the first quarter or something like that. And you know, Big Ben is not anywhere near where Big Ben used to be. Yeah. They Najee Harris, you know, is a promising young running back, so they do have that going for them. But you know, we don't really know the situation there. You know, Juju's back doing TikTok dances. I literally saw a TikTok yesterday of him at like some like camp with kids, and he, not like kids, like probably high school, college kids.
Yeah.
And he like pushed off on a wide receiver and he made the catch and he did the Corvette dance.
Jeez.
In the end zone. Next play, DB locks him down, picks off the ball, does Corvette in his face. So that was nice.
Juju, man.
So it's just kind of like, at this point, what's it going to be? Their offensive line just got absolutely destroyed this offseason.
Yeah.
They let Alejandro Villanueva go. They cut David DeCastro. Obviously, they brought in Trey Turner in his replacement, but Pouncey retired as well, and so it's going to be tough, you know, especially with, you know, Stone Legs Big Ben behind the line. He's going to have to rely on, you know, trying to get the ball out of his hands quickly, and if he needs to get the ball out of his hands quickly, it's most likely going to be to Deontay Johnson, who led the league in drops last year. So that's just not a good combination right there. Their defense lost Bud Dupree. They have a lot of guys who seem to struggle in terms of injuries on the defensive side of the football. You know, we both think TJ Watt's going to win defensive player of the year here. And it's not, you know, disqualifying him, because, you know, the Steelers are going to take this hard fall, in our opinion. But I think, you know, it's kind of time for the Steelers to look to the future and figure out really what's going to be the future at the quarterback position.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Steelers ended last year as about as poor as you can, starting 11-0, you know, finishing 12-4. That was pretty piss poor. And they just took that into the playoffs and just got beaten down by the Browns at home. But, you know, I think they're going to fall off. But, you know, I really like Tomlin. I trust Tomlin. He has proven to be a very impressive coach in his tenure in the NFL. I don't think he's ever had a losing season, which is very impressive. And they've faced adversity before, too. So maybe this is the year that they finally go under 500. But, you know, Najee Harris is a guy I really like. I'm actually very high on Najee Harris. The more I'm kind of reading about him and figuring out about him as it's coming out, he's a very impressive young man. And I think that he has sneaky offensive rookie of the year capabilities in him. I think he's going to be the easy favorite for best rookie running back this year. I think he's really impressive. You know, he's a big running back. I'm excited to see him play. But, yeah, Big Ben is getting very old, and that's a problem. And I don't think he's going to be able to stay healthy for all 17 games. So they're going to need to find someone else probably to kind of, you know, groom into that next starter there. But, yeah, Pittsburgh really couldn't finish last season worse. And I think that kind of carries over to this season. But, yeah, I think Pittsburgh finishing 12-4 last year, I'll say they finish, you know, I'll go 8-9. I'll go first season for Tomlin under 500. And 8-9 is not going to be enough to win that division, that powerful AFC North. So I think they missed the playoffs.
Yeah, and I mean, 8-9 will definitely put them at third place in that division. I see it very hard for the Bengals to make any ground in that division. It's really going to be up to the Ravens and the Browns, obviously the Browns being our number one AFC pick this year for the playoff predictions. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting year. And like you said, Tomlin is very well respected, and I was really surprised, and I'm still surprised, that he let the TikTok stuff go on and that it's still going on, because I feel like he's the kind of guy who wouldn't stick up for any of that stuff going on in the locker room. So we'll see. But in terms of the NFC, I know the team I had for the NFC we were both kind of in agreement with, but we didn't want to, you know, have three of the same teams for this and make it really boring. So I'll let you first share who you put instead of the team that we're in agreement on my side for the NFC for the hardest fall.
Yeah, so in the NFC, like you said, for the team, it was another NFC West team that I have taking the biggest leap next year, but another NFC West team here taking the biggest fall in 2021. And I got the Seahawks, who finished, you know, 12-4 last year, and they won the division, which is, you know, it was very impressive. You know, the Rams were a great team last year. To be able to overcome that challenge and win the division with them was impressive. But yeah, I think they can. I think they're gonna finish under 10 wins. In my opinion, the Russell Wilson whole thing with him not having protection is very real. He runs around like crazy back there, and that's probably the only quarterback in the league that can withstand that pressure. He seems to get out of a bunch of sacks, but even still, this line is very bad, and the division's getting better. The Rams are going to be better than they were last year. The Niners are going to be better than they were last year, and the Cardinals as well. The Cardinals just bolstered their defensive line, getting J.J. Watt, which really does not should not please Russell Wilson whatsoever, as he is already used to running around from you know, his division rivals' defensive line. So it's going to make his job even harder. And, you know, they've got a lot of questions on defense now. Jamal Adams, even still, is in the midst of a contract holdout, so who knows what's going to happen there. If he misses any training camp, that might not be good for him. And, you know, that's their best defensive player, and he's a good football player. I don't know how good of a safety he is. I think he's a very good, you know, linebacker when he plays down there. But I think the Seahawks, you know, are going to be, like I said, in the very, very tough division again. And they're going to play the Rams twice, Niners twice, Cardinals twice. And, you know, I just think they finish, you know, 9-8, 10-7, something like that. But maybe even worse. But I think they're not going to be the team they were last year, for at least for the first half of the season. I know they started off hot. But yeah, I think that this is, and it's hard to go against them, because Pete Carroll seems to always kind of figure it out with that team. But I can see the Seahawks taking a pretty big fall next year.
Yeah, and it's definitely a fair point. We also, you know, have both said we could see every single NFC West team making the playoffs next year. So it's really up in the air. And I apologize. Did I skip your biggest leap?
Maybe. If you did, it was the Niners. And it's just because they're healthy again. Last year was terrible. But, yeah, they're going to be healthy this year. Losing Salah, it hurts a little bit, but they still have all the talent there, and Shanahan's a genius. So I think they can, you know, be a winning team again. So that's my biggest leap there.
Yeah, and the team for the hardest fall for the NFC that we were both in agreement on, obviously there's a big factor that plays into it, is the Green Bay Packers. Obviously, if Aaron Rodgers is not there, it's really going to be up in the air. It seems like Jordan Love doesn't look too good in training camp from what we've heard. So, obviously, you know, things aren't going to look too pretty there. Obviously, they continue to kind of avoid filling that void of wide receiver needs. I think they took a wide receiver in like the third or fourth round of the draft this year, not even the first or second. I don't even remember who they took in the first round this year, but it was just another weird pick. I want to say it might have been
Amari Rodgers?
I want to say it was a corner or something.
Oh, with the first round pick?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was a corner.
And so it just kind of really pointless. And, you know, obviously things aren't pretty there, and time we've seen or heard from Aaron Rodgers on TV, he doesn't seem to want to be with the Packers at this point. So if Aaron Rodgers is not a Green Bay Packer, things are going to be ugly in Green Bay next year.
Did you see the SP video where all the stars were making fun? Oh, not making fun, but it was like a video that was put at the SPs, and they had like all the stars at the at some golf tournament, you know, kind of chime in about where he was going to land. It was kind of just for jokes, but it's becoming more of a joke now, or kind of like a meme to see where he's going to end up. But yeah, that's one of the biggest question marks in the league, if not the biggest. So if he's not there, it's very easy to say the Packers don't finish even close to what they were last year, which I think was 13-3 in the one seed in the NFC. So yeah, that's gonna be interesting to see where he ends up. I know people that think he's going to play every snap for the Packers. People that think he's going to be a Denver Bronco. No one really knows except for him, and maybe he might not even know yet. So, yeah, Packers are a pretty very questionable team. So they can definitely take a big fall without him.
Yeah, but again, only time will tell.
Yep.
And with that being said, we are going to go into our ad break here and hear once again from ourselves and from our sponsors, Anchor. So we'll be right back after this quick little message. And welcome back. Thank you once again to our sponsor, Anchor, for continuing to help us grow our audience and engage with people from, as we've learned, all over the country here, and just continue to support us. But with that being said, we are continuing our segment of Best Player by Number this week. We have 21 through 30, which is very heavily dominated by two areas of the football field, one being running back, the other being defensive back.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any non-running back or defensive backs on this list.
Yeah, I think you're right,
for
actually.
At least. But yeah, with that being said, you know, we are going to, you know, just kind of go back and forth and say who we have where. Obviously, we have a little bit of a different system in our opinions of who we decide to put where for these numbers. There are a couple numbers that I feel like it was pretty easy to pick guys, and then there was numbers like number 29 where it was impossible to find a guy.
Yeah.
So with that being said, I'll let you start us off with number 21.
Okay, yeah, I think at 21, you might not like it, but I got Zeke Elliott at 21. I think that, you know, he's had an off year last year and kind of saw his touches kind of go down with Pollard there, but I think he's still very talented. I think Dallas still has a good running scheme. He's very, you know, he's a great all-around running back. He's very powerful, very fast. I think he's the best player to wear number 21. And I got, like, Denzel Ward as my honorary mention here. I think he's a very great DB for the Browns, but I think that Zeke still has that top spot for me.
Yeah, obviously, you know, Zeke is kind of the obvious one here, and with his down year last year, I didn't exactly solidify the spot for him. I had to, kind of honor a veteran before him. So for me at 21, I gave a spot to Frank Gore just because of how long he's worn the number four, kind of just out of respect for what he did. You know, it's a little against my rules and my system. I do still have Zeke on here. I have Denzel Ward as an honorable mention as well. And then another honorable mention I have is Jeremy Chin, who had an incredible rookie year last year for the Carolina Panthers. And I just think, you know, he's a guy who's could really be a standout and eventually be the best number 21 in the league. And then 22 is the case scenario where, just like 15, there's only two words needed here. And those two words are Derrick and Henry. There's I didn't even bother looking at 22 to even see honorable mentions. Do you have any honorable mentions? I think if I had any honorable mentions, just because it popped in my head, would be Adoree Jackson, because he's wearing 22 for the Giants now, former Titan teammate of Derrick Henry. But
yeah, I mean, there is one. 22 is actually a little closer than you think. I still have Derrick Henry, but Christian McCaffrey also wears number 22. Yeah. You know, he's my honorable mention there. I still think Derrick Henry is the number one. But yeah, McCaffrey's, you know, had more injury problems than Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry's been more consistent. And, you know, they're very different running backs, but yeah, I think Derrick Henry is just easily the best running back in the league. Until McCaffrey can stay healthy, and you know, who knows? They're very different, but I got McCaffrey at 22 at the honorable mention there at 22. I know that the PFF list was super long, so yeah, I got Derrick Henry for sure.
Yeah, I didn't even look at 22. I just put Derrick Henry.
I
didn't even bother to look.
That just shows you how good Derrick Henry is. Like, you don't even have to think, but yeah.
Yeah, for 23 I felt like was pretty obvious. I again, didn't really see any honorable mentions that necessarily caught my mind. At 23, I have whom is considered by many the best cornerback in the league, and Jaire Alexander for the Green Bay Packers. I didn't see any honorable mentions that popped into mind for me, but I am presuming you agree with me here at 23 with Jaire Alexander.
Yeah, I got him easily at 23. Like you said, a lot of people think he's the best corner in the league, up there with Ramsey, you know, top two right there. And he really had a fantastic season last year, which kind of solidified the spot for him at 23. Honorable mention is a guy that's kind of been inconsistent. Started his career off pretty hot. But has kind of slipped off and not really done as well. And that's Marshawn Lattimore out of New Orleans, another cornerback. This is a guy that seems to only have his best games against Mike Evans, and that's it. But yeah, he's you know, he's an Ohio State DB. He's been pretty up and down. But you know, when he's up, he's really up. So I got him as a honorable mention for 23.
Yeah, and 24 is one where I went to split decision and didn't pick a winner, because the two guys I have at 24, both kind of based on injuries and kind of also lackluster performances last year from other guys at their position, propelled themselves into the top five in their position, and solidified themselves as top 10. You know, some might not consider them top five at this point. I have my Giants, James Bradbury here, but I also have Nick Chubb of the Cleveland Browns here as well. I think both guys deserve to be here at this spot. Both of them really had breakout seasons last year. The fact that, you know, Nick Chubb was able to put up the numbers he did with Kareem Hunt getting plenty of playing time is just truly impressive. And then James Bradbury having his best season by a long shot, earning his way into Pro Football Focus's top five cornerbacks this year, and earning his spot into the Pro Bowl. He was a Pro Football Focus All-Pro selection as well, so I think it was really hard for me not to put both of them here for 24.
Yeah, and I got Nick Chubb headlining right here with the crown here. I think he's a very talented running back. A lot of people think he might be the number one running back, or number two. I know Derrick Henry is kind of hard to beat, but people think he's going to have a really good season next year. And he did last year, but yeah, he kind of splits time with Kareem Hunt there. But he's very, very talented. Another Georgia running back. Georgia seems to produce a bunch of great running backs. But yeah, I got Bradbury and my honorable mention, as well as, you know, players like, I'll even throw Marcus Peters, you know, Darius Slay, Antonio Gibson, and Stephon Gilmore as well, who's, you know, been a defensive player of the year. So definitely deserves to be in that honorable mention for 24. But yeah, Gilmore needs to, you know, figure it out. And, you know, and he had a very, you know, off season last year. But, you know, just the fact that he's a deep boy, he's in there for me.
Yeah, and at 25, I feel like it was kind of easy here again. The man with 10 interceptions last year, Xavien Howard for the Miami Dolphins. Kind of hard not to give the crown to somebody who had double-digit interceptions.
Yeah, it's very impressive. I mean, I think he and J.C. Jackson, who wears 27, who we'll get to, are the only guys that went over 10 picks last year. But yeah, he's a very talented corner, very acrobatic corner, has crazy impressive interceptions. So I think he deserves to be at the one spot for 25. And my honorable mention, as ironic enough, is Richard Sherman. Just the fact that he's had all of his accomplishments and done all of the things he's done. I think he deserves to be an honorable mention, but, you know, he's still in the league as of now, I guess, but he'll be in there for my HM.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
I kind of disqualified him after the news this morning. For me at 26, obviously, Saquon Barkley is my guy here. You know, it's hard for, you know, even not being a Giants fan, I feel like it's hard not to put Saquon here. He's one of the most dominant running backs in the league. Many people see him as the most athletic running back in the league. He's just incredible what he can do when he has the football in his hands. Honorable mention, another Penn State running back for me here is Miles Sanders for the Eagles. A little bit of an off year for him last year, and he's really seen a lot of time, kind of been a running back by committee guy for the Eagles because they've seemed to like that scheme. And I have a feeling he's going to see that quite a bit again this year with Sirianni coming in from Indy, who ran a big running back by committee last year in Indy with Jonathan Taylor, Nyheim Hines, and Marlon Mack.
Yeah. Wait, did I, are we in 27? Did I skip 26?
26. Yeah.
I mean, 26, yeah, I got Saquon, Barkley. Obviously, we all know how great he is. Injured last year, brutal ACL injury, but he is one of the most talented players in the league. So, you know, I got him at 26 and hope he comes back stronger this year and, you know, wins that comeback player of the year.
Yeah, and at 27, as you mentioned earlier, we are going to get to J.C. Jackson here. I didn't give him the crown quite yet just because, you know, while he did have a great season last year with New England, he is kind of coming into his own still a little bit for me, and I feel like it's just still hard for me to put him over Tre'Davious White here, who I have here at 27. Tre'Davious White is seen by many as a top five corner, top three corner. At a time in his career, he was seen as the best corner in the league. So it was hard for me not to put Tre'Davious White here over J.C. Jackson and having J.C. Jackson as my honorable mention.
Same thing, yeah. Trey White, very, very talented corner. You know, kind of a smaller guy. I think he's like around 5'10", but very feisty, great ball skills, very impressive at LSU. And it's just a staplement of that Bills defense, which has been pretty good these past few years. So I think he's a top five, you know, top four, top three corner in the league, depending on who you ask. But yeah, J.C. Jackson's my honorable mention as well. You know, he went over 10 picks as well. I think he actually got 11. But yeah, he's there. And I also got Malcolm Jenkins just because of the all the accomplishments that he's had and all the experience. And, you know, he's just he's been a great player in his career. You know, he's kind of old now, but he deserves to be in my HM for 27 for sure. 28, a lot of running backs here. Who you got?
28, I went two guys who I think are top 10 running backs, and Jonathan Taylor and Josh Jacobs. Really no need to explain. I think they're both great young running backs, and I mean, it's been pretty incredible to watch both them in the start of their careers. I really enjoy Jonathan Taylor. It's hard not to have Josh Jacobs here, like I said, as well. Who do you have here at 28?
Yeah, so I mean, I got Josh Jacobs, Joe Mixon here as well as Jonathan Taylor. I like Jonathan Taylor as well as all the reasons you said. You know, great young running back. Good fit for him. Good line. Playing behind Quentin Nelson's, you know, very fortunate. And they have Carson Wentz now, so you know that opens the game up for him some more. But yeah, I got Josh Jacobs here as well as Joe Mixon, just two other running backs that have been above average in recent history. And I also got Adrian Peterson, who's been who's a legend of the game. People might see him as the best running back of all time. Depends who you asked. But yeah, he definitely deserves to be on this list as long as he's still in the league, because he is just a living legend. So that's who I got for my 28.
Yeah, I really like the Adrian Peterson shout there too as well. A little like my Frank Gore at 21. You can't not respect Adrian Peterson, a guy who in his own right with Richard Sherman had a little bit of legal issue as well. But, you know, he very much rebounded from it. He's been, you know, pretty solid, you know, despite his age. He's continued to prove, you know, why he arguably is the best running back of our generation. Great years he had there in Minnesota. 29, as we mentioned at the beginning of this list.
Yeah.
Nearly impossible to figure out a name here at 29. And I spent tons and tons of time trying to figure it out here. And for me, I was just like, screw it. I'm just going to go a little homer pick here. I went Xavier McKinney of my New York Football Giants, a great young defensive safety rookie last year. Unfortunately, only got to play three or four games because he broke his foot in training camp. He did have game-winning interception against the Cowboys Week 17, highest drafted safety last year out of Alabama. I can't really complain about a guy drafted from Alabama, especially if they're going in the second round, especially when we look at the success of Alabama safeties for us. Last Alabama safety drafted in the second round by the New York Giants, Landon Collins. Can't complain there.
Yep.
Obviously, a little different ending than we would have liked with Landon Collins, and now he's just not good as he was with the Giants when he was All-Pro, Pro Bowl, all that good stuff. But here at 29, what did you kind of decide on?
Yeah, this is definitely the toughest one by far. I was kind of waiting to see who you got for 29 because I knew it was a hard one to pick some guy for. But that's a good pick. Xavier McKinney's a good pick there. But I got guys like Malik Hooker, who's not even that great. I mean, he wears 29, I guess, so I got him in my honorable mention. And then I also got I gave Josh Norman the crown here just because he's a household name still. He was an elite cornerback in this league for a couple of years back. But yeah, I mean, he's Buffalo Bill now. He might not be the same cornerback he was in his prime in 2015, in those battles with Odell Beckham. But I think as long as he's still in the league, and I guess as long as he's wearing a number that no one else really seems to wear, that's pretty good at football in 29. I'll put him at 29, even though he did have a meme-worthy stiff arm last season against Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry put him on his butt. And it became a meme, but you know, we'll put that aside, Josh. We'll put you at 29, you know, just for the sake of it. So I'll give you it.
Is it fair to say that stiff arm put an end to Josh Norman's career?
It might have. I mean, that might have been the last. Might have been it for him. But if that means, I'm sure if we told Josh Norman that he made our top 100 players list, then he'd be okay with that. He'll go out on top knowing he made the UDFA pod. Yeah. Number 29 crown there. So
yeah, and I really like that you mentioned the OBJ Josh Norman stuff, because that stuff I'll personally never forget. Obviously, as a Giants fan, Josh Norman's another one of those guys I don't have any liking towards.
Yeah.
You know, those games between the Giants and Panthers were pretty incredible to watch. OBJ and Josh Norman just going at each other's heads nonstop, and it was pretty impressive. Here at 30, a little bit of an interesting one. You know, there's kind of two routes you could have gone with this one. I think we went different routes on this one. For me, I went on the offensive side of the football with the running backs. Here I went Austin Ekeler, and then a man who was an unbelievable undrafted free agent last year, and James Robinson, who had a great rookie year. If I'm not mistaken, he put up, I want to say, some record numbers in terms of rookie running backs. And he just had a great year. You know, I know he was probably the waiver wire pickup last year terms of fantasy pickups. I know one of our boys was able to pick him up and didn't let us hear the end of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's nice to, you know, see that, you know, James Robinson had such success in year one as an undrafted free agent, but it's unfortunate to see that the Jags decided to draft Travis Etienne in the first round, who obviously Trevor Lawrence is running back at Clemson as well. But Urban Meyer said that he was going to line up as a wide receiver at training camp, so we don't really know. But I think Austin Ekeler and James Robinson are my top dogs here at 30.
Yeah, I mean, those are some stellar running backs for sure. James Robinson, I would say even Phillip Lindsay as well, both guys that were number 30. Also, both guys were, drumroll please, undrafted free agents. But yeah, those are two impressive running backs that were number 30, and as well as Ekeler, who's, I think Ekeler was undrafted as well. I think he was, all three of those guys.
30, how about that? For all those undrafted free agents out there, now that you can do it, if you want to be good, wear the number 30.
Wear 30, for real, yeah. I didn't realize that, but yeah, all three of those guys were undrafted and were 30, and they're on our list here. But I am actually giving, those are all my honorable mentions, but I'm going to give the crown here to another young player. A few years under his belt, but he's Jesse Bates, the safety out of Cincinnati. Bates recorded the highest overall PFF grade among safeties last season with 90.1. He was one of two players with a PFF coverage grade north of 90, which is very impressive for him. He had a ridiculous 12 pass breakups with 3 interceptions last season well. So, you know, this is a guy that's really coming into his own. People see him as a top safety. I've seen him in a bunch of top 5 lists. But yeah, this is a great young player, and I think he's deserving for my crown here at 30. So I'm going to give that to him.
Yeah, and it's definitely a fair take. Jesse Bates is going to be a big part of the Bengals' future as they continue to build this big young team, the likes of himself, as well as, of course, Joe Burrow. Obviously, they just drafted Ja'Marr Chase this year. T. Higgins, great rookie wide receiver last year. A lot of people, I think, would agree with me in saying that if they redrafted last year's draft class, T. Higgins would obviously, for one, move up into the first round, but also move ahead of a couple of the guys taken in the first round ahead of him.
Yeah.
I was very fortunate to be a T. Higgins owner in terms of waiver wire pickups last year. Obviously, production went a little bit down once Joey B went down, but he still was very, very solid for me, and I definitely was appreciative of his duties at my fantasy team this past year.
Yeah.
But with that being said, we'll be getting into what I want to consider our favorite segment now, which is our little head-to-head matchups here. I took a 2-1 lead last week in week three where I picked first. We have had a common theme of the team who picks first wins in our first 3 weeks. So it is your turn to pick first. So maybe okay. You can even up the series here, Nick.
Yeah, I got some.
We'll see how this wheel kind of decides your fate.
Yeah, I need to have a nice little rebound punch here. I'm playing a bit behind. I think you've been ahead of the series the entire time. So let's see here. I'm going to spin the wheel for my first pick, and I'm going to get the Arizona Cardinals. So I could go a different way. I can go a couple different ways here. I can get Kyler. I can get D-Hop. Maybe their defense, but I think it's pretty clear I'm going to go D-Hop here for my wide receiver one.
Yeah, not a bad start at all. And just remind people, and also for those new listeners, we each get a quarterback, a running back, two wide receivers, tight end, O-line, and defense, and players can duplicate on each other's team, as well as teams can duplicate on the same team as well.
Yes.
But continue.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so I'm spinning the wheel, second pick, and I get the Baltimore Ravens. Okay, this is interesting as well. I can go Lamar, who's, you know, in a decent quarterback.
Not a terrible pick. I think I had Lamar one of the weeks.
Yeah, or I can go J.K., or I can go, you know, Mark Andrews, the tight end, or the defense. So a lot of different picks here. I think I want to save defense and quarterback, though. I think I'm going to go tight end and get Mark Andrews, you know, pretty reliable tight end there.
Love me some Mark Andrews.
Yeah, so will
I. On fantasy as well.
So I'll go ahead and take the man here, and I'll spin it again. And I'm landing on the Carolina Panthers. So
Sam Darnold,
I can go Sam Darnold, or I can go Christian McCaffrey. This is pretty pretty tough choice. So I'm gonna go CMC, getting my RB1 and wide receiver one, looking pretty stout there,
and tight end, pretty solid start. 3 for 3,
pretty solid start. All right, I'm gonna spin the wheel again, and I get the Cincinnati Bengals.
Oh, team we're just talking about.
Yeah, so okay, so I don't have a quarterback yet, right?
No QB.
Okay, so I can go Joey B,
You have a wide receiver spot open as well.
Okay. And Jamar Chase is pretty intriguing. Not their defense or their O-line. Yeah. So I'm going to go Jamar Chase, you know.
Not a bad pick. Number 5 draft pick right here.
Versatile wide receiver group there. We're spinning again here. So I have O-line and
O-line, defense, and quarterback.
O-line, defense, quarterback. Okay, spinning. Okay, I got the Jags. So it's the second time. I think I want to pick Trevor Lawrence. I think this is the second time.
I think I got Trev earlier in the series.
Okay, so
I'm not mistaken. I'll do some research now. Yeah. Actually, I was mistaken. You got Lamar, and I got Trev during week two when you had your one standalone victory so far.
Okay. Yeah. So that's a big. So maybe. No. I gotta go Trev. Yeah. Trevor Lawrence. For sure. All right, so I got
O-line and defense.
O-line defense. All right, spinning. And, oh boy, I get Seattle Seahawks. And that is not what you want to see when you need an O-line and a defense.
Yeah, definitely not ideal for you here.
So there's no chance I'm taking O-line here. For obvious reasons, it's just terrible. I'm not taking them. The defense is, you know, it's decent. You know, Jamal Adams is a poster boy there. So I'll
Bobby
take
Wagner.
Yeah, Jamal and Bobby Adams. Wagner for sure. Yeah, so I'll take Seattle there. And we're spinning again, and I get the Seahawks again, so it doesn't matter anyways. Yikes. I'm stuck with the row line, you know, just to spite me, of course. That sucks, you know, double Seahawks in a row. Not really ideal unless I need a quarterback or receiver, but I guess we're going to have to deal with that. So we get Seahawks defense and O-line to end it there. So my team
definitely cooled off.
Yeah, it definitely cooled off at the end there.
First 3 picks were pretty fire, and then kind of went downhill from there.
Yeah, it started off really hot there, so we need to just hope for the best here. Hopefully you pull a couple Texans and Jets.
Yeah, I do here.
All right, we're going to start with you. We're spinning, and we get the Houston Texans. Okay, just what we wanted.
Every single time, dude, I get the Texans. Brandon Cooks is my only pick here because I'm not going to take Deshaun Watson here because we don't know what his situation is.
And you've always taken Brandon Cooks, I feel like.
Yeah, this is my third time acquiring Brandon Cooks.
And I feel like you've won every time.
Yeah, why not?
You won every time you pick Brandon Cooks.
He's my lucky guy.
The heck is up with that. All right, we're spinning it again. And there's a rebound. You get the Green Bay Packers.
Little gotta go Devonta Adams if we're following the same rules. No, Aaron Rodgers here, which will help me kind of cancel out your DeAndre Hopkins. So
yeah,
that'll be nice.
It's a good little rebound punch there to my D-hop. Yeah. All right, we're spinning again. And you are going to land on the Miami Dolphins.
Ooh, kind of an interesting one here.
Yeah.
I could go their defense. I could go Tua, which I absolutely won't because I hate Tua.
Yeah.
Running back, I couldn't even tell you who their starting running back is right now. Their O-line's young and promising, but I am going to go with Mike Gesicki here at tight end.
All right, solid pick. Solid little tight end there. All right, let's spin it again. And you get Bang Bang Niner Gang, San Francisco 49ers.
Bang Bang Niner Gang. Got to lock up that defense and lock up your offense right there.
There you go. So Niners defense for Austin. And we're going to spin again. I think you have what left?
I got QB, running back, and offensive line.
All right. So we're spinning. And you get the Carolina Panthers again. So
a little CMC to cancel out your CMC.
There goes my CMC. So there goes a lot of leverage for me. A lot of leverage just left the room right there for me. Hopefully we can finish strong. Spin it again, and you get the Jets. Jets.
Ooh, it's kind of an interesting one. I could go Zach Wilson here at quarterback.
Yeah.
But I'm going to rely heavily on the big boy Mekhi Becton in the Jets O line here.
Okay.
Leaving my last pick to quarterback, which will give me.
All right, let's spin. See what your QB is. And you get Jalen Hurts out of Philadelphia. So
not great.
Yeah, not great. Not terrible.
God awful, but yeah. It's not better than Trevor Lawrence, I can tell you that much.
Yeah. So
let's do our rundown here.
This is gonna be close. Let's see.
It's definitely gonna be a close one. So at quarterback, we give you the edge, Trevor Lawrence over Jalen Hurts.
Okay, so I'm up 1-0.
Running back cancels out. CMC is not better than CMC in any way.
Okay, 1-0.
Wide receiver. It's kind of a tough one because D-Hop, Devonta Adams, depends on the season, depends on the person you ask, who you see is better.
Yeah.
I personally would say, you know, last year Devonta Adams was better. D-Hop is good pretty much every single year. But it's just, it's pretty hard.
I think we might have to push him here.
Almost a little cancel out here as well.
Okay, so
still 1-0.
Okay.
Which then moves us to wide receiver 2, which will be Jamar Chase and Brandon Cooks.
Okay, so you got to win that one.
Take a little edge for the veteran presence.
100%. Sorry, 1-1.
Then we move to tight end. Both solid tight ends in Mark Andrews and Mike Gesicki, but I think, you know, Mark Andrews is a little better than Mike Gesicki.
Okay.
So give you the edge there. It gives you a 2-1 lead.
Okay.
Moves us to O-line and defense, which isn't very pretty for you.
Okay.
I think I just had to get, like, one of, like, 27 teams to be able to beat you in these two categories.
Okay.
Jets, you know, is a little questionable here at O-line, but
yeah,
I feel like it doesn't get any worse than the Seahawks O-line.
Yeah.
So I get the edge there, and then I don't think there's – which ties it up 2-2.
Okay.
And then, unfortunately for you, I don't think there's any arguing in that the Niners' defense is better than the Seahawks' defense.
Yeah.
Maybe a couple years back, you could win that argument. But
yeah, I won't argue there. So I just blew a 2-1 lead, but that's what it sounds like. So
this is
definitely a 7-game series, in my opinion.
Which would give me in 7, which puts me up 3-1. So hopefully I don't blow a 3-1 lead in the series.
Has anyone gotten swept yet? No
4-0. No, we haven't gotten 4-0. You won. Your one win was in like 5 or 6 games. Your team was pretty dominant compared to mine in your win. I think 2 of my 3 wins have been in 7. I think I won in 6 last week, I want to say. But how about them apples?
Yeah, I mean,
first pick doesn't win this time. Brandon Cooks continues to win for me somehow.
Yeah, I mean, so if you want to win in this, you just got to pull the
just
Texans.
Just hope you get the Texans and just take Brandon Cooks.
Yeah, pull Brandon Cooks. But yeah, I wonder if anyone's ever going to get swept. 4-0 would be kind of dominant. I mean,
we were on pace for you to sweep me
with
your first 3 picks of DeAndre Hopkins, Mark Andrews, and Christian McCaffrey. But then, like we said, it kind of got a little ugly from there, and I got saved by Devonta Adams and my own Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah.
And obviously my offensive line and my defense not being bad. But yeah, this will take us into our question of the week, our new segment that we brought to light last week. I asked Nick a question involving the infamous 2016 draft in terms of him being a Rams fan. Obviously the trade to draft Jared Goff, who was obviously no longer the Rams franchise quarterback, who is now with the Detroit Lions. And then Nick in return asked me where I kind of see the situation with Cliff Kingsbury as his time could potentially be coming to an end in Arizona based on this season's outcome.
Mm-hmm.
So I will allow you to ask the question first this week.
Okay, so speaking of Texans, what a show they got going on right there right now, these current days, and even more so in the quarterback room, a lot of controversy, a lot of questions. So my question to you is, with Deshaun Watson's future in Houston in severe question, will Tyrod Taylor finally be able to keep a QB1 job, and is he capable of being a good starting quarterback in this league?
Well, you see, Tyrod Taylor's an interesting one for me.
Same.
Tyrod Taylor, he had his most successful years as a Buffalo Bills quarterback, and kind of that's all the time he's really had as a starting quarterback. Yeah. He is the definition of a backup quarterback. He won the Super Bowl with the Ravens as a backup quarterback behind Joe Flacco. And obviously, he was supposed to be the starter in L.A. for the Chargers this past year, but then somebody decided to puncture his lung.
And Cleveland, too.
And in Cleveland as well. He did start before Baker got the ball. So for me, it's a little tough. A couple years back now, probably at least 5 years ago now, I actually got in the argument with somebody about whether or not Tyrod Taylor or Ryan Tannehill was a better quarterback, and I was on the side of Ryan Tannehill, which has obviously worked out in my favor.
Yeah, it did.
This was back in Tannehill, Miami days, early in his career coming out of Texas A&M. For me, I don't think Tyrod Taylor will be able to hold the starting job this whole season. I think I'm blanking on his name, but they drafted a quarterback out of Stanford this year.
Davis Mills, I think that's his name.
And I think, you know, if Deshaun Watson's out the door, I don't think, you know, they're going to rely on a 30-something. I believe Tyrod Taylor's in his 30s now.
Yeah, he's getting up there.
A 30-something-year-old quarterback in Tyrod Taylor. I think they'll eventually give the ball to their Stanford boy, especially with our prediction of the Texans going 0-17 this year.
True.
So I find it very hard to believe that Tyrod Taylor can be a successful quarterback this year, especially with the lackluster of talent around him in Houston.
Yeah.
Because I cannot name a single offensive weapon on that roster now besides David Johnson, Mark Ingram, and Brandon Cooks.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of wanted to ask you to see where you stood on that, because I know Tyrod Taylor is a guy that I've kind of been a sneaky fan of for a while, and I think that he's been really unfortunate. He's been injured in a bunch of – it seems like wherever he plays, where he goes, that team, like, drafts a new quarterback. We saw it with Baker and Justin Herbert, and I don't know. If he didn't get injured, who knows what would have happened, because in Cleveland – he was a starter. Head coach made that clear. But, you know, he got hurt, which, you know, forced Baker in, and the rest is history there. And then he went to the Chargers, and Anthony Lynn said he was the starter there, clearly. But then we had that infamous lung issue and injury with the Chargers there, kind of forced Herbert into the scene, and then the rest is history there. So injuries and rookie quarterbacks, that combination seems to be like the detriment to him. Look, here we got Davis Mills in Houston too, so the same situation. So maybe we see history repeat itself. Again, who knows what's going on with Watson, but I don't know. I always want to root for Tyrod. I think he's, you know, I think he throws a great ball. I think he's a pretty decent quarterback, pretty mobile. But yeah, he's kind of been unfortunate, but yeah, who knows, maybe he can be a lengthy starter there, but yeah, it is an interesting question and an interesting job competition to look at.
Yeah, and it's definitely a thing where we won't know until the season starts. But Tyrod, it's time to kind of figure it out. We don't really know what's going on with you here at this point. But my question in return to you.
Okay.
Nick and I have been crazy enough thinking about this now. I've been doing fantasy together for 7 or 8 years now. Which is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
We are planning on having a pretty cool fantasy league this year, pretty large league. We're hoping to have an in-person draft with everything obviously becoming safer with COVID, both of us being fully vaccinated as well as many people around us. So my question is to you, we're about a month away from our draft because we are planning on drafting before Nick leaves us to go back to Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
If Aaron Rodgers is not back in Green Bay come time of our fantasy drafts, how far do you think Devontae Adams falls?
Let me think here, because it for example, guys like D-Hop in Houston, obviously perennial wide receiver talents. You know, these are guys that were born to play the position. But anyways, the D-Hop's a guy that didn't have that great of quarterbacks throughout his career, even before Watson in Houston. But he was still, I feel like, drafted pretty high, and he still put up numbers no matter who was throwing to him. And, you know, I think that the same thing could happen to Devontae Adams. Obviously, we've never really seen him without Aaron Rodgers, so that's a big question. That was a question that was answered with D-Hop. We knew D-Hop could do it with any quarterback, basically. But Devontae's always had Rodgers, and Rodgers is considered to be one of the greatest throwers of the football ever, ball placement and everything. So falling in the draft wise, I'm sure with Rodgers he's like a second round pick,
late first early second.
Yeah, late first early second. Without him, it's gonna depend on the amount of trust that fantasy owners are gonna have in him just being a great wide receiver. I think he could be, maybe a third or fourth rounder. I feel like that's the lowest he could fall, just based on how great of a receiver he is. It kind of be disrespectful to see him fall farther than that. I know I wouldn't let him slip farther than that, and I'll give him a chance. But you know, it's really interesting to see the situation at hand, because I wish I knew more about the situation, and I wish fantasy owners knew as well. But yeah, quarterback is a pretty big factor into a receiver's game, unless you are guys like, you know, D-Hop, and maybe this is Devontae. This is a year that he can prove that he is a guy like that. If he has like Jordan Love throwing to him and he still puts up the same numbers, then we're gonna be like, okay, Devontae can do this without Rodgers. He really is elite. But just the fact that he's an insane route runner, I think he's the best route runner in the league. That no matter who you have throwing to there, he can get open. An NFL quarterback can get you the ball in most cases. So I think he shouldn't fall too far. I'll say third, maybe fourth round, late fourth, but yeah, I wouldn't let him slide that far personally.
Yeah, I think, you know, if Rodgers isn't his quarterback, I think, you know, it could move him down into that third round, but like you said, myself, I would not let Devontae Adams get out of the third round. If it was up to me, I don't even see him gracing the fourth round. If he does, it's just absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
Like you said, even with Jordan Love at quarterback, I think he'll still put up great numbers. But yeah, like you said, we've only seen him with Aaron Rodgers, and in college he had Derek Carr. So
yeah,
you know, it'd be interesting to see, you know, if something comes out before, you know, like probably like within this month, that, you know, Rodgers isn't going to come back. I'm curious if Devontae Adams would demand that trade to go to the Raiders, like he's hindered about wanting to reunite with Derek Carr as Fresno State boy. There, so I think that's something that's just interesting to consider.
Yeah, I mean, if you're an elite route runner, Devontae Adams is not really, you know, a contested catch guy. He's a guy that gets open and beats you with his routes, and creates enough separation that makes it look easier than it is, because he's really impressive in that aspect of the game. So elite ball placement probably isn't the number. Obviously, it helps a bunch, but elite level ball placement that Rodgers gives you isn't as important with Devontae because of his route running abilities and his ability to get open. If you just get the ball to him in the general vicinity, when he breaks his route, I'm sure he's going to bring it down. So, for that reason, I don't think he should fall that far.
Yeah, and he definitely makes it look really easy. I remember, I want to say it was in the playoffs this year when the Rams played the Packers. There was that goal line play where Devontae Adams went in motion, I think it was twice, and then he just did a quick slant and cut all the way across and just got away from Ramsey. And Ramsey was very visibly frustrated, but it was just pretty incredible. And, yeah, I think we don't see Devontae Adams drop too far.
Yeah. Shouldn't, yeah.
I don't recall which one of us went first last week in terms of our weekly hot takes, as we are at the end of our episode.
Me either.
We're a little bit past that 1 hour mark. I believe you went first last week because I just looked at my hot take and I'm pretty sure I talked about it at the end.
Sounds good to me.
So I'll go first this week. I am following my question of the week trend of fantasy here with my hot take. Last week I talked about Bobby Wagner, Blake Martinez, and Darius Leonard all breaking the single season total tackle record, with Blake Martinez coming out on top of three of them. And for this week, I've mentioned previously that Josh Allen, I believe, will be QB1 in fantasy come the end of the year this year.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, I believe that his teammate, Stephon Diggs, will be wide receiver one. And we will see, to my knowledge, one of the very few times, I don't know if it's ever happened, that we have a quarterback and a wide receiver from the same team that are QB1 and wide receiver one at the end of a fantasy season.
That's definitely possible. Those are two guys that can get it done. They've seemed to establish a pretty good chemistry and connection there in Buffalo in that in their first year together. Josh Allen is a very talented quarterback, and Diggs is an extremely talented wide receiver, so I can definitely see that happening. And if that does happen, I'm sure the Bills will have, you know, the number one or number two offense in the league and be a top seed in the AFC. It is a hot take because that's rare. But at the same time, man, these are two talented guys. So I can kind of see that happening for sure. So my hot take is quarterback related again. And this is a guy who was drafted in 2016. This is a guy who has seen some bad times in his old city, injuries and whatnot, and coaching. He didn't really connect with his coach at the end there. But he's in a new place now. He's got a new offensive line. He's back with one of his old coaches. And the guy I'm talking about is Carson Wentz. And
I was thinking old Jared Goff here.
Yes, threw you off. See, I'm talking about Carson Wentz, and I think that Carson Wentz will finish top three in passing yards this season. I think he will be in the MVP conversation for at least one point in the season. I'm gonna say he makes the Pro Bowl, maybe as an alternate, if that. And I think he wins his first career playoff game. And I think this because we've seen Carson Wentz's ceiling and what he can do. And it's pretty incredible. If he didn't get injured in that season in 2017, this is probably the MVP of the league. But his ACL injury really cost him that award as he sat out. And they kind of just defaulted it to Brady, you know. But that was that. But he is behind a line now that's very, very, very impressive, led by Quentin Nelson. So he's going to have that protection. He's not going to be running around like he was in Philadelphia, running for his life, you know, getting sacked. He's going to feel more comfortable. And this is a guy that's very athletic, very, very mobile, has a fantastic arm, and has weapons. He has T.Y. Hilton, Michael Pittman, who's a very impressive, you know, deep threat, tall guy, contested catching guy. And then they got Paris Campbell, too, Ohio State wide receiver. This guy runs a 4.3 140. Can take the top off of a defense pretty easily. And then they got Jonathan Taylor as well to round everything off with that O-line. Very impressive running back, like we mentioned earlier. So they got the weapons. They have all the weapons I think they need for him to be able to accomplish these things. And it is a hot take. This is why we do this. But it's something I can see, you know, happening. And I think that Carson Wentz has it in him. To have that kind of season for the Colts in that, you know, AFC South. But, yeah, I mean, I'm sure that's piping hot, but that's my hot take for this week.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't 100% disagree with it. I personally really like Carson Wentz. I personally thought the Rams should have taken Carson Wentz over Jared Goff in the 2016 draft before the draft even happened, and even the aftermath, obviously. Both of them in their own rights have been to the Super Bowl. Obviously, Carson Wentz didn't play in the Super Bowl because of his ACL injury that he suffered at the hand of the Rams, funny enough.
Yep.
And I agree with you 100% that I think he should have won the MVP that year despite his ACL injury, and they just defaulted it to Brady. A lot of people thought that. And I would love to see him have a resurrection here and really have a great season with the Colts. And I don't dislike the weapons he has. But for me, I don't know if the weapons he has are good enough to allow him to be top three in passing yards like you think that he can be. Mm-hmm. For me, I really enjoyed T.Y. Hilton, but he's not the T.Y. Hilton that was playing wide receiver with Andrew Luck at quarterback. Michael Pittman Jr. is a great wide receiver out of USC going into year two. I definitely like the upside he has here. A lot of people are liking the fact that, you know, he's going to have Carson Wentz throwing in the football this year because, obviously, Carson Wentz, we know, has the arm to be able to be a deep ball threat, whereas, you know, obviously, Phillip Rivers was kind of on his last bolts last year, kind of grinding his gears to get the football swing in, really just has that unconventional release of the football as well. And, you know, a great point, too, as well with Paris Campbell, who can really just be electrifying with the ball. And, you know, I think another guy who could potentially help with that passing yard prediction of yours is Nyheim Hines, running back for them as well. He's very big in the little slot dump-off guy or a little screen pass for the running back. He's definitely their pass-catching running back guy. He was definitely very big in a lot of weeks last year. The thing is, for me, is, you know, what is going to happen with Jonathan Taylor and Nyheim Hines? I think that was an issue last year that kind of hindered Jonathan Taylor year one, was the fact that they were more running back by committee and giving Nyheim Hines a lot of bit of playing time. And obviously, there was, you know, a chance neither one of them were going to start until Marlon Mack tore his ACL last year, because Marlon Mack was really good for the Indianapolis Colts, really under the radar kind of guy. But I think, you know, it's definitely a piping hot take. It's very correct statement. I'd love to see it happen. My only thing that I think would hinder it is how good the weapons can be for Carson Wentz around him, because I wouldn't say they're at the level that I could see them helping him get to that passing yards. I could very easily see him, you know, being top 10 in passing yards. But I don't know if they can be good enough to propel him all the way to top 3 in terms of passing yards and, you know, obviously into the MVP conversation. But I think if that were to happen, I think it'd almost be more likely that he could potentially win comeback for the year, even without the injury, without obviously being injured last year. I think he might have had like broken finger or something at some point.
Yeah, he's got to stay healthy. That's another important thing.
But I think it's definitely a fair take, and I would personally love to see it happen. It's just, for me, can the weapons around them help him do it?
Yeah, and I mean, those are all great points. Like I said, I think health is one of the most important issues that he needs to be taken care of. He needs to stay healthy, obviously. But I also think he's going to have a chip on his shoulder. This is a guy that was basically dumped out of Philadelphia, the city which embraced him when they drafted him. And all of a sudden, stuff just fell through. They draft Jalen Hurts in the second round, I believe. And if you're Carson Wentz, even with a team during that time, and you see that your team taking a quarterback of a team that you think is your team, you're like, why are we spending a second-round pick on this guy? And that was a guy that took his job eventually. So I think he's going to have a little chip on his shoulder, prove that he can be a franchise quarterback. I think he's going to be really motivated and fired up. I think this line is enough for him to stay healthy. They'll protect him enough. But, yeah, I do think that – I think that Paris Campbell actually will be a sneaky good receiver for him. I think he's going to end up being his favorite target just by the fact that he can get open easily and just put the burners on and get open. I think that Paris Campbell can have a really good season. But, yeah, this is going to be interesting to see. It is a hot take. Top three is a lot to ask for. But you know, I just want to see us hit on one of these, and that'd be super cool to say you called it. So, and I just think that this, you know, this has a decent, you know, not a great chance, less than average chance of happening, but it definitely is something that can happen. It's not out of the question.
Yeah, and it's a hot take for a reason.
Yep.
And we'll just kind of see what has to happen. We really do hope one of these ends up actually happening.
Yeah.
But with that being said, we are at like the hour 15 mark right now, which, you know, is the max limit we like to go. So thank you guys for tuning in once again, episode 8 of the UDFA pod. Again, we appreciate all of you listening, helping us get to 100 total plays last week. Seeing that we have fans from like 10 different states is truly pretty cool, especially when a couple of those states, neither one of us know people that live in them. Uh-huh. So that was definitely cool for us to see. So thank you guys for continuing tuning in. We appreciate all the support. Continue to find us on so many different platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, this, that, iHeart Radio, whatever.
Yeah, wherever you get your podcast, we're there.
Your podcast will be there. But thank you guys for tuning in once again, and we'll go ahead and pass things off to Spencer to take us on out of here.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Undrafted Free Agents Podcast. Be sure to follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at UDFAPod. That's at UDFAPod to stay up to date with the podcast. Until next time, just remember, you don't always need to be drafted to be successful.